Hello, this is Dorothy Killian and Joan Murray. We're recording one of Dorothy's oral histories on October 15th, 2011. We're specifically going to focus on certain areas of Mill Valley, but lots more will come up. So what I wanted to start with is, Dorothy, if you would just tell us your name, your birth date, if you're comfortable doing that.
Of course.
And where you are from originally.
Well, I was born February 26, 1920, in Oakland, California. So I am a native Californian. My mother was a native Californian, born in Eureka. And I grew up in the East Bay in Oakland and Piedmont. I went to Piedmont High School and still have many, many friends. Well, there are only a few alive, but we kept in touch over the years from seventh grade at Piedmont, a whole group of friends, which is great because we're in the same area.
That's wonderful.
There's only one now in the Bay Area that lives in Sonoma. And of course, because I can't drive, she comes down to see me, and she's 1 year older than I am.
Well, that's wonderful that you've stayed in touch.
Yeah, but we are in touch all the time.
Good. When did you come to Mill Valley?
I came to Mill Valley in 1952. I graduated from Berkeley from Cal in 1941, right on the eve of World War II, and I had transferred to Berkeley from the University of Colorado, where I started college, although I grew up here. But I went to, I had a best friend at the time all through high school, and we both decided to go to Boulder together. Her name was Peggy McNamara, and she was the younger sister of Bob McNamara, who became quite famous, the Secretary of
Defense.
And we were very close for years. And then we both transferred back to Cal. We both pledged Alpha Phi, lived together in the sorority, transferred back to Cal together. And but I had a very serious boyfriend in Boulder, and I came back. I went back to visit him at his graduation in May of 41 and came back with a diamond engagement ring and went through all the, my parents were not really happy about it, but they put the announcement in the papers and we had the whole rigmarole, you know, of the engagement, and we were supposed to get married in the spring of 42. And of course, you know what happened in 1941, everything. However, I had taken a civil service exam as part of my public political science program. That was my major at Cal. And so our professor, Samuel May, suggested that I take, you know, that all of us in the public administration part take the civil service exam in I took it in January 1940, and in that summer, when I was only thinking of, you know, getting married, having showers, everything, probably looking for some little job. I did have a very temporary job at Transamerica in San Francisco, but anyway, I kept getting all these job offers all over the country. 1941 was the perfect year for women to graduate from college.
Interesting.
Because all the men, I mean, most of the men in my class got a commission with their graduation certificate, because they, of course, took ROTC because it was a land-grant college. And anyway, there were lots of jobs for women, and we kept getting, I kept getting these job offers. And one was from El Paso, and they were from awful places that I was just laughing, you know, toss it aside. Then I got one for Washington, D.C., and I'd always dreamed about going to the East Coast, where I'd never been. You know, mm-hmm. nobody did that mm-hmm. in those days. Mm-hmm. Some families who had ties in the East Coast did, but they had to go by train or car. It was a long trip, and as I say, my family had no ties there. They were all either, my ties were either in Colorado or California. So anyway, I accepted, sent my boyfriend in Denver a telegram telling him I was going to do this. And he came, then I got a telegram on the train that he was going to be driving up from Laramie, up to Laramie when the train went through at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I think he thought I was going to get off the train and go back to Denver with him. But I didn't, and mm-hmm. that was my whole direction of my life changed. So anyway, to make a long story short, I was 3 years in Washington in the working for the War Production Board, and I went right into a really great job with my own secretary, and I had been determined that I didn't want to learn to type. Mm-hmm. I didn't intend to type. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I didn't have to. I sure found out after the war that I should have known. But I was an administrative assistant for one of the branches. And then I did I did other things, but you don't want to hear all that. We're talking about Mill Valley. And then I broke my engagement because I'd fallen in love with another man in Washington. And then he went into the Marines and went to Iwo Jima. And when he went off to the South Pacific, I decided to join the Waves. Well, the Waves turned me down because of my vision. And they didn't take people who didn't have 20/20 without glasses, mm-hmm. including women mm-hmm. who never went overseas. Mm-hmm. But the Coast Guard did, so I was a spar officer, and I went to the Coast Guard Academy in New London for 6 weeks, where I was on D-Day, 1944, and then I was hoping I would be sent either to San Francisco or back to Washington, but I got the first Naval District, which was Boston. And of course, it was a wonderful experience. And I was at the, I was there for a year. And then I was transferred back to San Francisco in 1945. After VE Day. I was in Boston VE Day and in San Francisco on VJ Day. And then I was supposed to go to Salt Lake City to become the recruiting officer for the Rocky Mountain area for the spars. And of course the war was over. Everything. I did go to Salt Lake for maybe 2 months. Mm-hmm. No more than that, then right back to San Francisco. But I had to stay in the service until 1946 because I was a commissioned officer, and my commission was for 2 years. So I didn't get out of the until June of 1946, and then of course the first thing I had to do was go back east. See all my friends, and of course, we had that wonderful little insurance policy that every employer had to give you your old job back. I don't know whether you knew that, but...
Yes, I was aware of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but anyway, that was... So I went to New York with first a long, long stop in Davenport, Iowa, where I had some good friends, and my first real experience with the Middle West. And I loved the summers in the Middle West and the East. Everyone else hated them, but I loved them. Having grown up here, I had never known what a real summer was until I went there. Anyway, I did finally go back to Washington, take my old job back, but it wasn't the same as it was
during the war.
During the war, mm-hmm. It was very boring, and I definitely knew I was going to come back here, so I did. I came back. And
in the meantime, where is this Marine that you had fallen in love with?
Well, he was not killed in Iwo Jima, but he came back. I went down from Boston. He called and wanted me to come. He was in the hospital in Cherry Point, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and I went down to see him, and he was suffering from trauma. I think it was the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
He said he had hepatitis, but it was a lot more than hepatitis. He was really a different person. But I did want to see him again. Then, I went to San Francisco, and I was gone for a year, and then I came back, and that was the main reason I came back.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it just didn't work out. It wasn't mm-hmm. the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back to San Francisco and got a job at, I didn't know what I was going to do, as most people don't know.
And the job market probably wasn't quite the same for women
Of course, all the men were back.
Right.
But the thing was, I had a very good friend who said, you should do what I did, go to a temp agency. And that's what I did. So I went to a temp agency, and lo and behold, you had a job all the time. And I just wonder if they still have those, and if
they
people
certainly
could do that
do.
Now.
Yes.
They could do that.
Oh, sure.
They? And it's a good way to find out where you really want to work and
that's
what
right.
you want to do. My first job at the temp agency was with the Wine Institute. It was just a summer replacement job, but it was fascinating. Just fascinating. I met a lot of those people from the wine industry. It was just the beginning
mm-hmm.
of the big surge
mm-hmm.
in the wine industry. And then after Wendy Heberle came back, that was the end of my job, I went to the agency, and the next place they sent me was to the Waterfront Employers. Well, if that wasn't the perfect fit for me, my dad had spent his entire business career at the Hawaiian Pineapple Company, and he was, as I said, he was a staunch Republican. Harry Bridges was the devil incarnate.
Yeah.
And here I was going to be working for the Waterfront Employers. Daddy just thought that was fantastic. But I worked for the man who was the head of it, I guess they called him executive secretary because he wasn't a Waterfront Employer, but was Al Gatoff. Now, do you remember that name?
I don't. And
you don't?
No.
Well, Libby Gatoff, his wife, was a big power in the Democratic Party in Marin.
Ah.
I didn't know that this all happened later. In fact, she was the person who signed a lot of the Treasury notes. She was, what did they call it? Anyway, she wasn't the postmaster or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right.
She signed a lot of it. And Al Gatoff was a wonderful man and very nice to me and gave me opportunities in there to do things. And I met a lot of the reporters that came around, because the waterfront was booming. Shipping was beginning. And it was a perfect time to work there. And actually, I met people there who told me that there was a little paper, and of course I knew the paper too, working there, called the Daily Commercial News. And this one man said to me, why don't you come over and work for us? And So he took me up to see the big boss, who was Kilby. The publisher was the Recorder Publishing Company, the same company that published the, you know, the Recorder, the legal paper. And anyway, they approved me, and I, well, salaries, you know, my salary was infinitesimal.
Yes.
Right then, I was living at my parents', you know, in Piedmont, so, and commuting.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was so much going on, and I had a lot of, it was a great job. I could go on for pages and pages, mm-hmm. but you mm-hmm. want to talk about Mill Valley.
Yeah, I want to get to where, yeah. how you got yeah.
and
here.
That's when I met Leo, when mm-hmm. I was in San Francisco, and then we started going together in about...
And so where did you... Now, this Leo was your husband, and where did
he
you...
He was an attorney.
He was an attorney, and where did you meet him?
He was an attorney, and I met him through a friend, and his office was really... He was on Montgomery Street, and I was at 220 Battery, right at California. So we saw a lot of each other. He was divorced. He had graduated from Bolt in 1935 and had been married for 10 years and got divorced right after the war in 1945. And so anyway, we got married in April 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved, our first home in Marin was in Sausalito. But then Leo decided that he was given this offer by the senior partner in his law firm who wanted him to come down to Monterey because Mr. Hogue had a heart attack and his home was in Pebble Beach and his wife didn't want him coming up to the city for the entire week. And so we did that, and I really loved living in Carmel, but I had to quit my job then, mm-hmm. you see. Mm-hmm. I worked at first when we were married living in Sausalito. We commuted together, and then I had to quit my job. And when I got down there, I wasn't, you know, I didn't really push it. I didn't really look hard enough for a job. But it turned out that we didn't stay. Leo decided he didn't want to. He was on the road all the time going up to... There wasn't enough business in Monterey County alone
mm-hmm.
for the firm, so mm-hmm. he was spending all his time up in San Jose, Santa Clara County. So we came back and looked in Sausalito, and there wasn't any, things had changed so much, and we were just going to rent. And so we ended up, I came to Mill Valley and went to put an ad in the Independent Journal, which had an office right on West Blythedale. Remember that little office? Right next to it was the realtor Dowd. And so I thought, well, I'll just go in and see if they have any rentals. And I went in just that morning. It was fate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had, this woman had come in to put her house on the market for rent. Not to sell, she didn't want to sell it. Her name was Jo Seligman, and she and her husband were going to move to Eureka. He was already up there. He was a teacher. And so it couldn't have been more perfect. And I mm-hmm. had come up alone looking, and I just said without hesitation that we wanted it.
And where was it located?
Well, you know, you undoubtedly know that little group of, they're like cottages, and they're all sort of hidden away. Some of them are right on Throckmorton, but most of them, they're in all between Throckmorton and Tamalpais,
Cornelia?
Lovell.
Oh, okay.
And Lovell, on the uh-huh. uphill side, right at Eugene, across from Eugene. See, I lived at 500. Well, you couldn't see our house at all from the street. It was a long driveway up, and we were tucked in there, and then there were others tucked away. Alice Long lived in another long driveway, but her, I said she lived next door to me, but they weren't really next door. You couldn't see their house, and they couldn't see mine. But we just loved that house. I loved that area. But the little houses were all built by a man named Conrad Kett, and it was his, on his family property. He was an architect, and they were built right in 1939 to take advantage of the bridge. Mm-hmm. And they expected commuters and young people, single people or people without children. All of those little houses had one bedroom, great big living room with plenty of space for entertaining, and but one bedroom and one bath. And so we, I just loved it there.
So
loved
that was
Mill Valley.
What was the address?
500
level.
500 Throckmorton.
It was Throckmorton. Okay.
Right across from, and the Kleiss house.
I know exactly.
You know,
what
is 501 Throckmorton, and they were living there. Carrie Kleiss, Harvey had died, the old Harvey Kleiss, and Carrie Kleiss, his widow, was still living there in that house. And Sylvia and Sam Newsom were living in the barn behind it, and I met them. Sylvia gave me the big pitch for the League of Women Voters. And anyway, it was perfect. I loved every bit of Mill Valley from the moment I came here, and I never wanted to live anywhere else. I could never understand how my parents could possibly settle for the East Bay when my dad was a commuter his whole life, when he could have lived over here.
Of course, Piedmont is a really beautiful area, too.
Well,
Piedmont is a very beautiful area also.
Oh, but yeah, but there's no comparison in, you know, the outdoors area,
right,
the wilderness area, the mountain,
sure,
and everything that we had here.
Sure.
And everything is much more small town here. You felt, yeah, like you were living in a city over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, houses were on a street with sidewalks and
right,
and they're
very prescribed and organized in one block after another, whereas here we're more spread out. It's like you're saying.
But of course they were in Piedmont, in the area of Oakland where I live. They were not on a block, a level. Nothing was level. Everything was hills.
Uh-huh.
We lived on top of a steep hill, and actually, it turned out that we could see this school in the distance. When my parents told me this, of course, I didn't know, but when they bought the house, when I was like three, I think, and my baby sister had just been born, and they said, the real estate agent said, well, your children can go to that school, pointing to Wildwood School, which was, we were on one hill, and there was a canyon, and Wildwood was on the other. And actually, it turned out that we couldn't when we went to school. We had to go to Crocker Highlands, which was really a much nicer school, but it was way out of sight. We had to go up and down and up again. And, you know, we never thought anything about walking. Of course we walked.
Sure.
We all walked to school.
Well, and I'm sure your kids did, too.
Oh, they did. Well, my boys did, but I took Anne to high school, but I did that because it was good for me. I took the dog, and then we went on a long walk after, but I did take her every morning down to camp.
So you came here in 52, and then, so I wanted to ask you a little bit about what it was like then compared to what Mill Valley is like today. I mean, and what are the differences that you...
I thought a lot about that, and people say to me, oh, it must have changed. Well, where I was living, you see, then when we bought our house on Cornelia in 1954, just in time for Tom's first birthday. Tommy was born in November 1953. And so we moved into 81 Cornelia in 1954. So that was the same area. We were a half a block to Old Mill School and the Episcopal Church and two blocks to downtown. I mean, the library was right there on Lovell. Everything was, you know, it was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And who would ever want to live anywhere else? But when I think about it, you know, and I would say, people say, oh, you must have seen so many changes. I said, well, there was an awful lot exactly the same as it was when I moved here. And there have been a lot of changes of businesses, but the Outdoor Art Club was there, the Sequoia Theater was there, the, let's see, what else that was still there? The depot was there, but it was a bus depot. Wasn't a bookstore. And the plaza was not there because the Greyhound buses came in and went out. My husband was a commuter at first, and you know, he would walk down Throckmorton and to the very convenient, and then even more convenient when we lived on Cornelia.
Mm-hmm.
Although we had a really steep driveway. Our house was between Cornelia and Tamalpais. You can't see it from Cornelia or from Tamalpais, anywhere. But anyway, I hated to leave it.
I'll bet. When did you leave it?
We moved, we sold it in 1963.
And then where did you go?
And that's when we moved to Shelter Ridge. And that is what the start of, no, that isn't the start, because...
Well, Shelter Ridge, certainly, when you think of that area, I mean, there was nothing there at all.
No, that's what I want to say.
So let's start at Shelter Ridge.
I want to start with that.
Sure.
Because what, let's see, these notes. My trouble is that I can write notes, but then I... and read them after I've written them. Well, for one thing, my connections to this area, and I'm talking about the area now of Camino Alto between Miller Avenue and East Blythedale,
mm-hmm.
on the east side. And when my first connection with it was that it was the city dump, and it was all a big saltwater marsh. But actually, as Alice said, she called it the swamp. and this whole area, it was the end of the bay, and it was really unspoiled, no buildings, nothing was there. The only thing that was there was the PG&E power station, and
just below,
and it's still there,
Knowles,
and it's
right?
still there, yeah, mm-hmm. and the PG&E towers on Eucalyptus Knolls,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
otherwise nothing, and the highway was not there. The main road from Sausalito to North Marin came up as far as Tamalpais High School, then they turned, and Camino Alto, where I live today, was the main highway over to Corte Madera and Larkspur. And that's the road that everybody took. And
I should mention that we are talking from the Redwoods Retirement Center at 40 Camino Alto, which is near the corner of Miller.
It is
and
the
Camino
corner
Alto.
Of Miller.
And that right now, from your living room, we're looking over to Tam High. We can see the
That's
high school
right.
from here.
I face Tam High School. And, of course, the train used to come in to... I knew nothing about that. There were no trains. There was one train. A freight train came every day down Miller Avenue. You may remember that, too, because that happened... into the 50s.
Right.
And it ended at the lumber company. It mm-hmm. just went to deliver to the lumber company. And I would say it was maybe not even once a week, once every 2 weeks, something like that. But I do remember that this was the main road, and the highway was not built. Everybody thinks 101 was always there. The bridge opened in 1937, and the freeway was not completed until the 1950s. In fact, I took my little boy, who was born in 53, and we went over there and we watched the building of the freeway. Mm-hmm. And we knew, I had a big picture book that I bought that talked about all the road building equipment. I can still remember the name of them. The sheep's foot grader, the tamping and leveling finisher, and he can remember them all too. And we watched for hours, you know. It's something that little boys just love to do, see those great huge road building machines. So that was the beginning of 101, although I guess the road was there, but there was a stoplight at Tiburon Boulevard, it was not a freeway until the 50s. And I remember Mill Valley. My first memory of Mill Valley was visiting with my family, some friends who lived on, I found out where they lived. Their name was Valentine. And I remember asking Katie Mills if she ever knew Betty Valentine, because I thought maybe she might have. They had two girls, and my parents had two girls, and my dad and Mr. Valentine worked together at Dole, and so we used to go over there on weekends, and I just thought Mill Valley was a wonderful place, but I had no idea, really, until I moved here. I kept trying to think, where was that house? Mm-hmm. Where did they mm-hmm. live? Mm-hmm. And when I was working in the history room, I discovered all those old telephone books. So I looked for an old telephone book from the 1920s or 30s, and there I discovered their name. And what I thought was maybe up on Cascade or Throckmorton was Alvarado. You know where that is.
Yes.
So it was right on the edge of Boyle Park, and of course, it was much more open in those days, and there were redwood trees, and I was completely wrong, but I saw their name in there, and of course I realized right away that when I went to look at that house with the address, mm-hmm. that was the place.
Interesting.
So, but then my next trip to Mill Valley that I remember in my memory was with the Piedmont Campfire Girls, and we came over two different times where we rented a house on the highway, on Highway 1, right on the same side of the street as the store, you know, the store that everybody knows, but up a little farther, north a little farther.
On Stinson Beach?
I think it's still there. Mm-hmm. It's a brown shingle house. And we just thought it was so great. It was, I'm trying to think when we did that. It was not, it was a long weekend. It might have been the Memorial Day weekend. But we girls would just go, I think now, you know, we just couldn't wait to go in the ocean. Mm-hmm. We all swam in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Of course, mm-hmm. we always had, you know, mm-hmm. we just grew up with that. Mm-hmm. And it was so freezing that my children never wanted to swim in it, but we never thought of that. It was just the way it was.
Right.
And I remember when I was in New London at the Coast Guard Academy, we had one weekend off during all that training. One day this was, because we couldn't leave the base, but we went down to, it was a nice day, and we went to swim in the Sound, and everybody looked at us like we were crazy, and the only people out of our class who swam in the Sound was this girl from Oregon and myself. And it did not feel cold at all compared to the Pacific.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. But anyway, that campfire trip, and another thing about that campfire trip was I always thought that we'd gone over the Dipsy, that we hiked from Mill Valley, and I always thought we'd gone over the Dipsy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out one day, hiking with a friend who lived on Edgewood, walking out the pipeline, and I thought, this is the way we came. This is so familiar. And then we got up, and I realized that the Alpine Club was the place where we ate our bag lunches. We sat out on that long porch, mm-hmm. you know, with mm-hmm. the screened porch mm-hmm. that looked out over the valley. And somebody had, you know, made it possible to, you know, who belonged to it, some parent probably. And then we went on down to Stinson Beach from there. So we really didn't go on the Dipsy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Class. You were class. So,
but, okay.
Let's get back to the...
Back to this area.
Right.
Okay, now I said, I have a list here of my connections to this area, and the first one was the dump, and I told you about that.
Right.
Leo used to bring the boys to the dump, and they brought back more more treasures than they took. At least that was what I said. But we had things hanging up in the garage for ages that came out of the dump here. And one was a welder's mask that I always thought afterwards that if they'd only kept it, would have been a perfect costume for Darth Vader. But we let them keep all the stuff, and they just loved their junk. And then my second connection was the Tamalpais Nursery School. So when my first child was born, we heard that was a very good nursery school. This was Beverly Bastion's Tamalpais Nursery School. It was on Miller Avenue then. It was, there's still a nursery school there called the Little School. You know that, what was that?
By the Baptist Church.
I think it was the Baptist Church mm-hmm. when Tom mm-hmm. went there. And so when it came time for Paul to go, by that time they had a big fundraising thing and had built this new nursery school in connection with the Methodist Church on the Methodist Church property. And I think it was there probably a while. See, Tom and Paul are almost 5 years apart. They are 5 years in school. And I think it was probably before he went there in 1960. Well, Anne was born in 61 and Paul was 3. So Paul went to, in 1964, I guess. He didn't go that first year after she was born, but he went in 64. To Tamalpais Nursery School down at the Methodist Church. And then when Anne came along, you know, she went there. He went there for just 1 year, and then he went to Old Mill to kindergarten. And then Anne, who was the last child, went for 2 years. And I think it was when Anne was there, when I was taking a car full of kids, you know, we carpooled. And I was taking them, came down Miller Avenue, made the left turn. We had a big Dalmatian then. And Pepper jumped out of the window, over my shoulder, out of the driver's window, which was open, into the intersection there, where the Safeway is.
Oh, my.
When we were making the left turn. Well, it was just terrible. But I could not do anything about it because I had all these kids in the car and we were on, so we just continued on, and Trevor followed us. Nothing happened to him, and he followed us all the way around. to the nursery school.
And he was okay?
He was perfectly okay. But he was a disaster in every way. He was just, you know, we had him for only 1 year. Mm-hmm. But he was our first dog. And then my next connection with, let's see. Oh, then I went with Mrs. T, Mrs. Terwilliger, which she had a little preschool group back in the days when Anne was, you know, before she went to kindergarten. And we went to, I remember her taking us up to where the shell mounds were, you know, right there on Richardson Bay, near Seminary Drive, right under that overpass. Well, you probably know what I'm talking about.
The Richardson Bay.
When you go around from the side, from our side, and round and under to the Strawberry Shopping Center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's right there on the shore of the bay. And we had this, everybody was just fascinated by that. And her, of course, they all remember every word that Elizabeth Terwilliger told them and quote her all the time and still do. You know,
she had a very vivid way of describing things.
Oh, she did. She was a wonder. She was a very special person. Mm-hmm. I appreciated so much her so much. And then when Anne went to kindergarten, I guess it was when she went to first grade and was in school all day, I went on the Monday trips. So one trip was a one was hiking, and one was canoeing, one was bicycling, and one was a car trip. And the car trips were way out, usually to Point Reyes or someplace like that, you know. That was too much for me. I never could do the car trips because I was gone too long and didn't get back and before the kids got home from school. But I loved all of it. I had some of the best times and the best, my first experiences in what nature in Marin County was like. It was really wonderful.
You know, that I just thought about something I heard your son say at a program, a library program, and in reflecting on what you're saying about nature in Marin County, you might recall that Betty Girk had a program where she spoke about her book called Chief Marin.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah, Betty Girk.
Right,
oh,
and
yeah.
Your son Tom was there.
Oh, and yeah, and did you, oh, I was there with him at the library.
He said, I've been waiting for this book all my life.
I know.
And
I was there.
I was so tickled by that. I thought about that comment.
She was thrilled.
Well, I'm sure she was thrilled. How flattering.
Yeah.
But what you say, you were exposing your children to, through Mrs. Terwilliger and to the nature of Mill Valley, has certainly,
but,
I mean, look at what your children do for a living and how they were inspired by how they were
and
raised.
Actually, you know, you learn a lot through going along with your children and learning as they learn. I found that very much so. My mother was a great nature lover and practically a botanist. She knew everything about flowers, and she loved them, and she loved wildflowers, and she knew all the names and everything, but I never got as interested in it as she, although I did when I started living in Marin.
Mm-hmm.
Another very important thing for me in Marin was going to Herman Hines gardening class at the College of Marin.
Oh, yes.
And that was one of the first things that I did. But that was before Tommy was born, when we lived on Throckmorton. I just thought he was wonderful.
I am familiar with his name. I don't know, I never met him, but I know that he was the man who was responsible for the median on Miller Avenue.
Oh.
Because there was a transition from when the railroad tracks came up.
Oh, right.
And then later the buses, all the Greyhound buses parked on Miller Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And he's the one who transformed that.
I'm not surprised. I didn't know that, but I'm glad you told me, because he was an absolutely wonderful man, and I don't think he was as appreciated as he should have been.
Mm-hmm.
But most people, most women who had the time and were gardeners, loved gardening, took his class.
Interesting.
And it was in the evening. It was packed.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I just thought, a friend of mine who lived in Belvedere is the one who took me. She said, oh, you've got to do this. And I certainly knew that I should.
That's wonderful.
And it's another thing where, you know, when I go out in the country, I think of him and the things he told me, just like I think of Mrs. T and mm-hmm. the things she told me about plants and animals and the whole environment.
You know, I know we wanted to talk specifically about locations, but I can't help but think, you know, you knew Mrs. Terwilliger and Herman Hines, who was certainly important here too. Tell me about some of the other people here who influenced you or who you thought were memorable characters. Or
oh, well, those were two very well. Sometimes I say I have a very good memory, but I often do forget names, and then it comes back to me.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me the name of the woman who started the history. And I knew her.
Babs Dreyfus.
No. I knew Babby, of course, but no, I mean...
Lucretia Hansen.
Lucretia Hansen.
Okay.
And in 1976, Lucretia got all these women together who, because every community all over the country was doing this centennial thing, you know, for 1976. And so we all did, research on various houses, and we were supposed to do research on our own neighborhoods and everything. And, of course, she had all this material, and that she was the foundation of the history room and of the historical society. And I was on the first board. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I was the recording secretary. Babby was the president,
mm-hmm.
Babby Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of all the other people on that board. I know David Cross was on it, and he has since died, and Babby's died, and Peter Dreyfus has died. And I'm probably the last one left
mm-hmm.
out of that whole
mm-hmm.
board, but that it was a wonderful experience for me. I just loved that, and I did, and I have always been a writer. See, that writing was what I did in all my jobs, and I always wanted to be a newspaper woman, and I was for a short time, but I did a lot of writing in the Historical Society on research on those houses. They were mostly the ones, from the lot sale on Throckmorton and Cascade and that area.
From the 1890 land auction?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
the first auction.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that all of it was so fantastic. You know, all those German families, and you know why they all loved Mill Valley, because it reminded them of home, and they all were hikers. They get grown up hiking in the mountains
mm-hmm.
in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they wanted. And so the Falches and the, I'm trying to think of the Barcans. Nancy Ammon's house was the Barcan house.
That was the Kant Bustam, the man who invented the Kant Bustam overalls, who built that house on Throckmorton, where Nancy lives now.
Where Nancy lives?
Nancy Emmons, her old house
on
Throckmorton.
Yeah, but I think that Hans Barcan lived there first, But then he was a doctor mm-hmm. at Stanford. And then he moved up in Cascade. And then the Agnes Schoening's house, where Myra Wise lives, you know, and where Al and Maxine White lived when he was mayor. Remember?
You know that house? Yes, next to and the library, the current library. That's,
yeah, and that is called, you know, see, I knew all the names. I could give you all of that a few years ago, but now I've just... But I knew that Agnes Schoening, whom I knew at church, who lived on Ethel, it was her house, their house. They weren't the original owners, but they owned that house during World War II, and they were interned in the Philippines. Her husband was an importer-exporter. And they were interned there, and the Office of Price Administration took over every empty building, you know, during the war, and they put in either shipyard workers or Army and Navy personnel, and they took over that beautiful house, and the shipyard workers from Sausalito were in it because it was empty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they had the right to do that, to take over your house and even trash it. I mean, it,
right.
you know, but
yeah.
it was terrible.
Interesting. I didn't know that about
yeah.
that house.
And then that house, and then the place where we lived when we were first married in Sausalito was the, oh, now I can't think of that name. Not Giannini, but another Bank of America family, the Italian family, was their mansion. And during World War II, the Army took it over, or the Navy took it over, and turned it into apartments for naval officers. And so it was still apartments when we got married in 51, and we got the apartment that had been the big kitchen and the maid's room and bath, and the kitchen was enormous with floor-to-ceiling windows that looked right out on the bay mm-hmm. and the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was right across, it's on Bulkley, right across from the Altamira.
Sounds wonderful.
It's called the Ladera Apartments.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. We walk up there sometimes. What about your move to Shelter Ridge and that area?
Well, you know, now wait a second now. What I'm telling you, I was telling you that about the nursery school, and then, where's my next connection with... Well, then my next connection really was, oh, I mentioned with Mrs. Terwilliger. Then my next connection, and a very big and long one, was walking dogs. And I came down to walk dogs long before there was a dog park. Well, you know the dates of all these places.
Well,
Redwoods was built in 1971. The whole Shelter Ridge development was 1971. The middle school was 1971 or 1972. Anyway, Anne was in the very first class that went the whole 3 years through the middle school. And so that was, she graduated from TAM in 1979, so that would be 6 years before that. Yeah, that would have been 1972.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
was the middle school. She was in the first class to go
all 3 years.
There were, you know, two other classes that moved over there too, mm-hmm. seventh and eighth graders, but mm-hmm. they had already been at Edna McGuire. And so, of course, there was no community center then, but there was a community center.
Well, we did have that
little
community building,
center.
Yes, that we had actually moved over. It was a restaurant from 101.
Oh, you know that. That's
and
what I was just going to
over.
Tell you.
Right.
And that was, and Alice told me that the reason I got the date of that more or less right is that they moved into their house on Longfellow in 1959, and she said they had been there a very short time. It was either 59 or 60 when they were awakened in the middle of the night by this tremendous, horrendous noise, and it was moving that house. They, Alice said they were, the city said that nothing like that, a moving of a whole building could not be done unless it was done in the middle of the night. And so their house, of course, being on the lower slopes of Enchanted Knolls,
they
got
were
the full
aware.
Benefit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember that little building.
Right.
I remember taking a CPR class there, and there were, you know, there were all kinds of meetings there.
Yeah, it was
unlike the very fancy community center we have now, which is has people there all the time. It is really well used. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
That it is there. But now let me see. But then dog walking. Well, I walked the dogs. I first, Anne had a dog that she just couldn't wait to have a dog after she loved Pepper, but she was only about 2 years old when we had Pepper, but she wanted it. I said, well, by your 10th birthday, we'll get you a dog for your 10th birthday, that's for sure. So I kept looking at all the ads. She was born in February 1961, so she was 10 in 1971. And we finally got this little black dog who was a mixture. She was part Lhasa Apso and, you know, with the hair in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
She was darling, and she, we called her Kaffee. And so, of course, Anne, as happens to all kids who get dogs when they're 10 or so, they get interested in other things, their social life and everything. And poor Kaffee was being neglected, but not by me. And of course, I fed her. I started feeding her after Anne did everything at first. She's the one who took her to the training sessions, which were down behind that community center, the old one, and she was very good about, you know, doing all the things she was supposed to do. But I gave Kaffee most of the attention, and we walked every day, long walks, and we took long walks there. And as I say, there was no dog park. We walked up over eucalyptus knolls. There were no houses on it, just the eucalyptus trees. Then we walked down, and I think Shelter Bay was built around there. I think it was built around the same time as Shelter Ridge,
mm-hmm.
or maybe before.
Before. I think it was
before. It was probably built in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And then we would walk out around, they called this area Corinthian Isles. You probably never heard that.
I never heard that. That's
never heard that. Well, that's what the developers had named it that. And it was just this sort of little peninsula that stuck out. And they had a little trail all around the end of it. That is now Sunrise Point with those enormous condos.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's... And it was just that little... Oh, and then I have another story about that, this whole area. When the kids were... very little. Paul, I just asked Paul the other day if he remembered this, and he said, of course I do. And I said, well, how old were you? And he said, well, I guess I was 5 because I still believed in Santa. Do you remember this, ever going or taking your kids to see Santa come in his sleigh with the bells ringing and everything outside of Sabella's? At
no.
Christmas time?
No.
Well, we went to dinner, and we had all three of the children, and then this, I don't know who pulled the sleigh. I think it must have been horses, but I'm sure it wasn't reindeer.
But it was a real big sleigh and everything, and they had some artificial snow they had dumped, and and it was all sort of wild over there. Sabella's, you know, was on that frontage road, and right around where I guess around
where the hotel is,
right near
now.
Where Peyote's is now. You know, that area. That side of the bay.
That side of the highway, correct.
Yeah, that side. Yeah. And anyway, that was pretty exciting. they remember that.
That's fun.
And I had almost forgotten that. I knew that there were, I couldn't think, I kept thinking, what was the name of that restaurant? What was it? Was it Tarantino's and Alioto's? And then Paul remembered. It was Sabella's, of course.
Right.
And let me see. Then, to go back to the dogs, the dog walking was very important in my life. Because, well, we had Kathy for a long time, and Anne was down at UCLA when she finally died. And then in 1989, my kids gave me for Christmas a beautiful golden Cocker Spaniel. You probably remember me with her, or because I walked everywhere with her.
Right.
She was with me always. And she was actually born on the day of the earthquake. She was born that night. The earthquake happened early in the morning. She was born at 5 o'clock that evening. But anyway, so I walked every day. I would come down, and really, because that's when everybody who worked did. They came. We had a little group that came at 5 o'clock. I could have gone any time. But we had such a wonderful group down here at what became the dog park. But at first, we had a big fight over the soccer people wanted to take over the field, mm-hmm. the friends of the field. Mm-hmm. And we used to meet there on those little slopes, on the green lawns, and we all had our little plastic bags and cleaned up after the dogs. But I do have a wonderful picture from there, one of these great big pictures that was taken of the whole group of us with our dogs.
That would be a fun picture to copy for the history.
I should give it to the library. Yeah, I should. I will look for these. I will find them.
Okay, that would be wonderful if you could identify the
I do.
People.
And that, because there was a whole group of people that just. Now, if I meet some of the women here, you know, I say, "Oh, I remember you from the dog park." Most of us can't see well. I see. Do you know Kay White?
No, I don't.
She had a daughter who was Tom's age, and I think an older daughter too, but she still lives in her home in Homestead. But she comes to the community center, and I play bridge there every Tuesday morning, and she comes. She doesn't play bridge, but she plays something, dominoes or something. And we remember each other from the dog park.
The dog park, that's wonderful.
And there was a woman here who recently died, Inez, and she also was there all the time. But we were very determined that we were going to keep our dog park, but we didn't keep the actual part that we liked. They put the fence all around there, the Friends of the Field, you know, and we were essentially blocked out. We couldn't go in there with a dog, you know, and so we had to go beyond it. Well, that whole area, the end of that peninsula, was wild, and it was just wonderful in the spring. You know, it was covered with lupin. Do you remember it?
No, I don't.
It was so beautiful. It was just a mass of lupin and poppies. And it was just a beautiful spot. I just loved to walk around it. Then they went in when the Friends of the Field took over, and then they put the dog park beyond it. They planted grass, for the dogs, and so that was the end of the wildflowers. But they still have a dirt path all around the edge, and the dogs still like to go in the bay and swim, which for is really great for some of these big retrievers. They get good exercise. And
I know that the people have been very grateful to have that dog park. That's
to have what?
Have the dog park.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, it's so well used.
Oh, it's very well used. And of course, they do need more places for kids to play soccer.
Right.
And then I walked down here at the dog park long before we moved to Shelter Ridge. But when we did move to Shelter Ridge, you know, it was right down the hill from us. Well, our house was on Kilmer, which is the last street toward Mill Valley, the one closest to downtown Mill Valley, right above the corner where Kipling, you know, where you turn to go up Kipling when you come off the highway. And that whole corner was covered with oak trees, and it still is, even though we were sure they were going to, when they put in those million-dollar houses right below us, and they were talking about cutting down oaks, you know. I went to the council meeting then. One of the only times I ever went to the council meeting to speak about the, you know, cutting the oaks.
Well, good for you for doing that.
Yeah, well, they didn't take as many as they were going to.
That's great.
But they took some. But anyway, it's still, and I appreciate every time I go past there coming onto the highway and I see that whole corner that is those oak trees, which are so old and they're still there.
Really lovely.
So that is great.
Well, it's,
and that was also part of the Planning Commission cutting down the number of units he wanted to build there. This is Vonderwerth.
Right.
And they cut it back, and I think there were only 4 or 5 houses in there, all of which sold for over $1 million, of course. But anyway.
Well, that's really
interesting. And then we walked down. I walked down from there and back, and that was good for me, too, to walk down to the dog park and back from it. And then, of course, soccer came and took over so much of all of the parks. And I think there was a lot of fights about baseball being pushed out.
There still are.
And there still are.
There are still,
it's the soccer people and the baseball people.
Right. Yeah. And the neighbors, because the neighbors want to be able to have Sundays free. And maybe at this point, I would love to talk with you about that, but I don't necessarily want that to be part of your oral history. But it's interesting what you say about the development of this part of Mill Valley going east of Camino Alto, because there was really nothing.
There was nothing.
Nothing. And Enchanted Knolls had just been built after, you know.
It was a wonderful wildland. In a way, it should have been kept that. But also, I didn't mention the public safety building. And I think that is a disaster to have it over there. All the fire trucks, and I have been in the, you know, right in the traffic when one of them comes to answer a call uptown in Mill Valley. Of course, there's still fire trucks uptown, but they vary. If it's a big fire, they need to go.
Right.
And it's really terrible, that turn there. Another thing that I remember very well is that corner where the cantina and that, I don't know what that is called, that shop, that's center.
Blythedale Plaza.
What?
Blythedale Plaza.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. And then I remember there was a thrifty there.
There was a Purity store?
Purity. And in an old Quonset hut. And I think all those Quonsets were surplus
war material, weren't they? And one was the one on Miller, where Whole Foods is,
right.
Or right behind it, where Mr. Dingwall used to have his decorated, he did slip covers. And that was a Quonset. And then the Purity was a Quonset.
And of course, that's built on fill.
And I was asking, I was talking to Alice about this whole thing, and I said, well, was the Purity there? And she, when you moved, and she said, yes. So the Purity was there in 1959 and for several years afterwards. But the thing I remember about that corner was the Upstart Crow.
Yes.
And do you remember that?
I do. It was wonderful.
It was such a wonderful center.
It was a wonderful bookstore. Oh. You could have, it was a little cafe.
I used to love it. I went with friends all the time, and we bought books, and we sat around and talked about books, and it was just, it was the kind of place that I thought every community needs.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it just disappears.
Right. They went bankrupt, unfortunately. Well, I think we can stop. I still want to talk with you some more, but I think we can stop this part of the recording about that area, you know, this area of town. So thank you very much for that.
Well, you're certainly welcome. I really